And we're back. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
I'm Liz.
And I'm Laura.
And I'm Lucy.
And you're listening to From X to Z,
a podcast where we have multi-generational conversations
about things that matter
and some that don't. And today we're talking about our book of the month,
Yellow Face,
chosen in honor of Asian American Pacific Islander Month. And this was a good one. Yellow Face is written by R.F. Kuang, a New York Times best-selling author. And this book was also part of Reese's Book Club at one point, if you guys follow that.
Also, I would like to make a fun little mention, fun little observation.
Okay. We're low energy, guys.
It's been a long week. So the cover of the book is yellow. It's called Yellow Face.
That's fitting.
The book itself is white.
What?
Like this part?
Oh, when you take the jacket
is white
off.
And that was intentional. She has come out and said that was intentional.
That's genius.
Because of the book.
So there's a yellow cover on a white book. Ooh.
And so if you haven't read the book, you don't know what we're talking about. But
that got a lot deeper.
I know.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was pretty cool. I just now discovered that.
This was my first book by this author.
Same.
And I don't know if her other books are written like this, but I'm a fan after this book. I started this book and I read it in a day. I could not put it down because I hated the main character.
Yeah.
I hated the, I guess she's not a protagonist. She's an antagonist, right? I did not like her. And like, I just wanted her to get caught.
Yeah.
So I kept reading because I kept wanting her to get caught.
So yeah, it was super fun to read because it kept you on your toes.
Okay. So here's a little brief summary about the plot of Yellow Face. White lies, pun intended there, I'm sure. White lies, dark humor, deadly consequences. Best-selling sensation Juniper Song is not who she says she is. She didn't write the book she claims she wrote, and she is most certainly not Asian American. In this chilling and hilariously cutting novel from the number one New York Times best-selling author R.F. Kuang, authors June Hayward and Athena Liu were supposed to be twin rising stars, but Athena's a literary darling. June Hayward is literally nobody. Who wants stories about basic white girls, June thinks. So when June witnesses Athena's death in a freak accident, she acts on impulse. She steals Athena's just finished masterpiece, an experimental novel about the unsung contributions of Chinese laborers during World War I. So, what if June edits Athena's novel and sends it to her agent as her own work? So what if she lets her new publisher rebrand her as Juniper Song, complete with an ambiguously ethnic author photo? Doesn't this piece of history deserve to be told, whoever the teller? That's what June claims, and the New York Times bestseller list seems to agree. But June can't get away from Athena's shadow, and emerging evidence threatens to bring June's stolen success down around her. As June races to protect her secret, she discovers exactly how far she will go to keep what she thinks she deserves. With its totally immersive first-person voice, Yellow Face grapples with questions of diversity, racism, and cultural appropriation, as well as the terrifying alienation of social media. R.F. Kuang's novel is timely, razor sharp, and eminently readable. I would agree with that.
I felt like enveloped in the publishing world, you know? That was a fun part of the book for me.
I've read several books now that are about authors, fiction.
Yeah.
The characters are authors in the book.
And I've read another one this year like that too.
Am I just gravitating toward books that are like this? Yeah. Or is this a trend that's happening in books right now? I don't know. But anyway, this is a really good story. Athena is the genius writer, has found success.
Yeah.
She is Asian American. This is written in first person. We get really, really quickly that June cannot stand Athena. No. And they are friends by association. They went to the same school.
They also just seem to always bump into each other.
Yeah, be in the same place at the same time. And June, from the beginning, we get that she cannot stand Athena, that she's very jealous of Athena's success and lifestyle and everything else. But we also get that Athena was kind of a loner. And maybe I even picked up that maybe insecure because of her lack of friendships. So one night, June and Athena are out together. They're having some drinks. Athena asks June to come back to her apartment, and she chokes on
pancake batter.
Well, they've been drinking, and they're having a pancake eating race, and she chokes.
I guess they weren't fully cooked.
Yeah, and it gets stuck, and she dies.
Yeah.
And she just finished this manuscript, and June
steals it along with a couple other notebooks too,
and decides to edit the manuscript.
Well, because June, her publisher, is on her to produce a story, like a produce a manuscript, and she has nothing. And so this was perfect timing for her, because she's like, oh, I have this story, and it's like, I'm so inspired. And she actually was inspired, but it was not her story.
Yes.
And so, but she told her publisher that this was all of her idea and her study and her work and all this kind of stuff. So it was perfect timing for her that her friend died so she could steal her story.
And she justifies to herself, she justifies it by saying the story is really important and it needs to be told. So what does it matter who tells it? And then she convinces herself that she co-authored this with Athena, because she added a lot of things that were her own ideas or parts that she put in there. So it's really interesting that she finishes this manuscript that doesn't belong to her and then passes it off as her work. And then even more interesting is that publisher grabs it, thinks that it's great. They end up getting into a bidding war over it. She chooses like
this indie books publisher, like grabs it, called Eden, like, you know, super like hipstery, and so it's really good.
And then she takes these publicity photos and headshots, and she chooses the one that makes her look kind of Asian, or like, I guess, ethnically ambiguous.
And her name is Juniper Hayward. Oh, I thought it was, that's right. They changed it from that to that.
Yeah.
June Hayward.
I think June is short for Juniper. But
then she always went by June.
The publishers or the marketing team or whatever convinced her to go by Juniper Song. And I think Song may have been her middle name.
Yeah. But that's a, who knows, kind of name. So.
And on her publishing team is a Korean American who does not take well. To all of this. And of course, throughout the book, Juniper is making excuses to herself and to everyone about why she deserves this success and why she, like I said, she just justifies it over and over again. I co-authored this book, and Athena just did the research. And so anyway,
I have created a whole new idea from all of this because I've cut all this stuff and I've added all this stuff, and it would not have been her thing.
Yes. And if it wasn't for me, then no one would ever even have this story.
Right. She's doing Athena a favor to get her story out there, but it's not her story.
And then she ends up making a lot of money on this book and on this story. And there's some interesting things along the way. Again, we're not going to tell you about the whole book, because if you've read it, then you know. And if you haven't read it, then go read it and you'll know what we're talking about. But like Athena's mother should get obviously the money, the profits from her book. And so, and then Juniper justifies that. And then also Athena had a really interesting way of writing. She wrote all of her outlines and everything in notebooks, and her mom took all of those notebooks, and then Juniper freaks out. Athena's mom was going to donate all of those notebooks and all of her things to a museum at the school.
Yep.
And
then they would see all of her research and stuff
for this book.
Yes.
And so Juniper kind of freaks out and convinces her mom that Athena wouldn't want people to see that process. And so she's really vile.
She is extremely manipulative. Mm-hmm. Like, not even like there has to be a level up.
Yeah.
Because she is good at what she does.
And no shame in her game.
No.
Like, none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And she even is invited, after the book comes out and it's really successful, she's invited to
It was almost like a church social event, but it wasn't at a church.
Yeah, it was like an older Chinese community.
Yeah.
It was
like a book club.
Right, where there were some people who remembered the Chinese laborers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think they would be one, because that was World War One.
Yeah.
But they were
their family. It was like they had
family or something like that. Yeah. And so they invited her, and they thought that she was Chinese.
She literally picks her up from the airport and looks at her like in confusion.
Yeah, because she's like, you're not Chinese. And then when they get to the banquet or whatever,
it does not go well,
because
they kind of, all the people were confused. She didn't know how to answer their historical questions because she did not do the research. Mm-hmm. She also did not know how to speak Chinese.
Yes.
And they thought they were all going to be speaking Chinese together.
And they served Chinese food.
Yep.
And she didn't like the Chinese food.
Yeah.
So,
and then she also was talking to an older man about the war. And then she was like, I can't be here anymore, because she felt the immense amount of guilt.
Yeah. So she has these moments where you think she might have a soul and you're like, oh, okay. Like, the guilt is getting to her.
Yeah.
And then she immediately rationalizes it.
Yeah.
And talks herself out of feeling guilty and just moves on with her life. And the only time she starts to panic, she starts to get really stressed, she starts to get depressed, when her secret is close to being discovered, or when somebody is onto her, and that's when
she has to back up.
Like, that's the only time she ever seems distraught, when it affects her and how people see her.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's super, super interesting. All the things, plagiarisms in there, obviously, stealing,
lying,
cultural appropriation.
Yep.
I mean, just there's a lot. There's a lot. We have some questions. Laura found some discussion questions about this book. So I think, rather than just giving you guys the summary of a book that you maybe already read, or maybe you haven't. Maybe we are your Cliff Notes, but we're not going to give you the whole story, because one, I read this in a day several weeks ago, so I can't give you the whole story, because I don't remember all the details.
If the time I spent reading it, it would have added up to, I would have finished it in a day.
Yeah. So one, I can't give you all the details, because it's been a couple of weeks since I've read it. I did not expect to get through it so quickly, but once I started it.
You texted me like the day after we decided, and I was like, how did she already read all that?
Like, I finished it. It was really good. But also, like, if you have read it, you don't want to sit here and listen to us just retell it to you. So we're gonna talk about some questions. I will say, I've talked to several people that have read this book, because it's our book of the month. And the main takeaway that I've got from people is that we all hate Juniper.
Yes.
We're all like, I couldn't stand her.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reviews I read before we read this book was the same. And some people, even on like reads, were like, I couldn't get through it because I couldn't stand the main character. And I think some people didn't understand that was the whole point.
Yeah.
That the author uses satire brilliantly.
Oh my gosh.
Like, just draws you in with it. And I think that maybe the people who wrote the reviews about not being able to read it because they didn't like the main character, I think they maybe missed the point that you're not supposed to like her.
Right.
Like, that is the point.
Yeah, that's the whole premise of the book.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't find it hard to read. It's just the opposite feeling, right? When you read about a main character that's a hero, then you're cheering for them and you want to read the book to make sure that all the good things happen.
Yeah.
And in this book, I wanted to keep reading because I wanted this person to get exposed. Caught and get exposed and everything to be right with the world again.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of happens, but Maybe not.
Yeah.
It kind of left us with
kind of
a little bit of a cliffhanger.
Was it ambiguous? Is that the word?
Yeah, where you can be like, what is this? Is this what's going to happen next or not? And maybe there'll be another book to continue the story. But yeah, so this is good. And so, Laura, hit me with some questions. What are we going to?
Okay. We got number one. An essential element of a good story is conflict. Often the tougher the pain, the better the story. But what are the ethical implications for writing a book about someone else's very horrible real experience with the express hope of publishing a book and making money? Does it make a difference if you have that person's permission, or is it still profiting off of someone else's pain?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, right out the gate.
Okay, so what I'm thinking is motivation and intention, right? Obviously, there are a lot of books written out there about other people's pain. And obviously, if you sell those books, the author makes money, the publisher makes money.
Right.
Right. Like, that's the way that that works. But I would hope that the motivation would be telling a story that's important, that needs to be told. And the money would be a product of that, but not the motivation. Fading intention behind it.
Right.
Does that make
sense? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And even like that should be the reason you would write that story, right? And so if that's the reason, if you're motivated by someone's story, wouldn't you want to contribute some of your funds to that story or that person or that family, which she did not do either.
Yeah.
So that was part of some of her critics were saying that as well. Like, if this is the case, she should donate this and then that will make it better. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. There's something, there's some ick factor in someone who's like, this is a horrible story. If I tell it, I'm going to make so much money off of this. I mean, in movies, right? There's lots of movies that tell about really tragic stories. But I think a good storyteller, a good movie maker, they make money because they're good at telling the story, because they want to get the story out there, not because their goal, first and foremost, is the money, right?
Right.
And even though that is what happens, I think that a really good storyteller doesn't go into it with that.
That's a good point. A really good storyteller.
Because then you lose the story.
Yeah.
When that's the motivation behind it is the money. So.
Yeah. Ooh, money and ethics.
It's a good question.
It's a good one. Okay. Number two. Have you ever thought about how the publishing industry works regarding the authors they choose to publish? Specifically, do you think factors such as an author's racial or religious diversity, physical characteristics, education, sexual orientation, etc., play as much of a role in getting their work published as their writing craft does?
Yes.
It's so funny because if I'm reading something out loud, I focus on how I'm saying it and I don't so you're process. Like,
what was that question?
Exactly.
So I'll ask it. The first question, have you ever thought about how the publishing industry works regarding to authors they choose to publish? Yes.
Oh, totally. Well, and it's like the publisher that she went with, they're an indie bookseller, book publishing business. They thought it would be the up and cool book. You would be like the trending. It girl. And so, yeah, it was all their vibe.
Yeah. I've thought about the publishing process too, because I have thought about writing a book.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Wow. This is a fun piece of information.
When I started college, my major was English.
Okay. I never knew this about you.
Yeah. And then when everything happened with Marco, and there's been a lot of things that have happened in our story, and I've had a lot of speaking engagements where I've shared things, but I haven't shared our whole story because when I do a 30-minute speaking engagement, there's only so much you can say, right? So there've been a lot of different conversations I've had where people have said to me, like, you should write this down in a book because there's a lot more to it. And I have thought about it. And I also have friends who have self-published books. And so I've thought about, like, what is that whole process? So I have thought about it. And I've gone to different workshops where part of the workshop is that you can meet with a publisher, and if you, even if you have an idea or like if you want to submit a proposal or things like that. Wow. So I have thought about it, but I've never actually like gone down that road. I've just kind of gotten some bits and pieces of information before. So I have been curious, but after reading this book, I don't think I want, if this really is what this yeah. is like, because it's true. Very cutthroat.
Yeah.
And so now I understand why people self-publish too, because yeah. if you have a story, again, motivation, right?
Right.
If you have a story that you just want to get onto paper and you want to be out there for whoever might want to have it, mm-hmm. and that's your motivating factor, then I can see why people self-publish. You're not going to get rich off of a self-published right. book, but your story's going to be available.
Yeah.
So if this, I know this is fiction and I know this is like romanticized and dramatized, but yeah, if this is the actual process of publishing, mm-hmm. It sounds very cutthroat and mm-hmm. stressful. And I don't think that a lot of people would want to do that.
No.
But then, okay, the other part of this question, specifically, do you think factors such as an author's racial or religious diversity, physical characteristics, education, sexual orientation, etc., play as much of a role in getting their work published as their writing craft does? I would say I think it's probably equal parts, because one thing I have learned about the publishing process is that they really care about what kind of following you already have on yes. social media. And if you don't have a following on social media, they are not interested mm-hmm. in your story, mm-hmm. Which I get. I mean, makes sense, because they are trying to sell books.
Yeah.
That is what they're trying right. to do. And they want books from people who are already known, already have a following, already
like
have
influencers.
People.
Yeah. Like, you're not going to get ads if you don't have a following yes. already. So,
and you can be a really crap writer, but if you have a million followers on your Instagram yeah. or TikTok, you probably could get a book deal. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
very true.
You can probably come up with ridiculous things like toxic empathy and get a book deal.
Literally. Oh my God. That was such a good,
sorry.
Such a good pull. Okay. Hats off to you. It's great.
Sorry, guys. Sometimes it just comes out. I just can't keep
okay.
it in.
We haven't like, yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I would say that those things certainly matter.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. This is a shorter one, so maybe I can process it.
Let me read it to you.
Okay. Okay.
So Laura, before reading this book, how aware were you of the various inequities in the industry? Do you think it is fair to say that there is reverse racism in publishing?
Oh.
White girl gets that question.
I know, this is bad. Can we switch? No. No, okay. So we just talked about publishing, mm-hmm. how we both read books about publishing books. Recently, like mm-hmm. fictional stories, that might be a trend right now, but it's very interesting because, you know, usually you read books about historical fiction or romance or whatever, and I haven't really been schooled on that part of life, I guess, because I never wanted to be an author. I hated writing. So personally, I was not very aware. Am I answering the question right?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, okay. Were you aware?
Inequities, though. I don't think I'm touching on inequities. So I guess going off of that, no, because I didn't really know anything about it at all. Which, I mean, it makes sense. Everything in life has that.
Yeah.
It's not really super surprising, but just that mm-hmm. part of it was interesting to learn about. Even mm-hmm. though it was like magnified, but also
I think this particular story is different, right? I do think we could broaden this out and say that there are inequities in every industry, and that certainly just as racism happens, reverse racism also happens in for industries. But I think specifically to this story, I don't know that I would say that this was reverse racism.
No,
because one, I did not like the character, so it's hard for me to, but
to empathize with her.
Yes. Also, I'm biased because I am Asian American, mm-hmm. right? So I have that bias, and I'm aware of that, and I will admit to that. But she was selling a story about Chinese laborers, mm-hmm. and part of that is Chinese culture. And I'm not saying that white people can't, or any other race can't research, do the research right. and tell a story like that, mm-hmm. but the fact that her publishers wanted her to lean more.
Oh my gosh. And masquerade around like she was.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that, yes, we could say that's reverse racism, but also she was more than willing to do it.
Right.
But
also, you have the perfect chance. If you are inspired by this manuscript, still probably not the best because mm-hmm. she's passed away now. That's not great.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, like, you had a chance to do your research, mm-hmm. to continue to research what she had probably left off from. You had your chance to do that if you were going to go to this book club and yes. talk about this. If you were going to go to your publisher and talk about it, you did nothing. You were just like, yeah, it's me. I'm it. And you ended there.
Mm-hmm.
So I, oh man, what is entitled much? I feel like there's a lot to say there as well mm-hmm. with potential reverse racism. There's mm-hmm. a lot of entitlement in what some people think.
Yes. So. There was a part that I could so relate to when she was talking to the person that worked for the publisher. What was her name?
Was she the other Chinese or Asian?
She was Korean.
Korean.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. So sorry.
It's funny that you said that, though, because there was a part.
I thought we said she was Chinese earlier.
There was a part in this book where
trying to find her name.
Juniper refers to her as Chinese, I think, in a meeting or something like that. And she's like, I'm Korean.
Candace.
Candace. Yes. And I'm like, I can so relate mm-hmm. to that because I think I talked about this when we were talking to Tina and Rebecca.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, if you were Asian, you fell into one of two Asian categories, Japanese or Chinese, which one? And it's like, I'm Korean. And so
there's no Vietnamese option. There's no Korean option.
And there's the part in the book, if I recall correctly, they're in a meeting and then Juniper makes some sort of reference about, oh, when they were talking about having someone to proof the book that was a Chinese sensitive reader or something like that. Uh-huh. So it was someone who was very aware of, I guess,
culture,
biases, cultural differences, triggers.
Yep.
And things like that. So it would be someone that would read the manuscript and
through
that lens and be able to say, you might want to edit this or change the wording of this or take this out because it could be offensive to people in this population.
Mm-hmm.
And so Juniper was very opposed to doing that, mm-hmm. did not want to do that. And she was like, can't you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And the girl was like, I'm Korean. And she's like, so kind of like, the difference?
Yeah.
Like, can't you still do it? Without saying it was kind of like, isn't the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a trigger for me when mm-hmm. I read it. I don't know how many times. I mean, not necessarily malicious intent, but also it's a whole other country. It's a whole other culture. Yeah. It's a whole other language. It is not the same. So, I thought that was, I don't know where I was going with this, but just mm-hmm. something that this question made me think of. So there you go.
No, reverse racism.
You just got some of my thoughts for free.
I love it.
I'll invoice you. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, we're all about ethically paying people here. Okay. Next question. June says, for writers, jealousy is more like fear, not being able to achieve what her fellow writers have, and that she is, quote, not and never will be enough. How do you define jealousy in your professional life?
Okay, so when I read the quote, not and never will be enough, I immediately think not necessarily about jealousy, but about imposter syndrome.
Ooh.
And I feel like I do get that a lot. Mm. Like I am faking it till I make it, so to speak. When I really think about it, I don't think I am. I think about the things I'm doing and I am educated in this or trained in this or what, like I know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I still feel like I am an imposter. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not necessarily jealousy, but I do often feel like, and I'm sure there's a whole lot to unpack there as to reasons that people feel this way, but I do often feel like I'm not enough for this position, for this role, for this, whatever it may be. So I struggle with that a lot in my professional life. Mm-hmm. How do you define jealousy in your professional life? I don't want to get on a whole soapbox mm-hmm. about the inequalities of Time's Up, right? Of men's pay versus women's pay.
Yep.
But I will say, I would be lying if I said that's not something that
totally
affects me in terms of jealousy in my professional life, because it's a fact. It happens. Mm-hmm. It's not fake news. Statistics yep. show, salary show, yep. and it is true that men are paid more than their female counterparts.
Yep.
But I don't know how I would define it. I guess I would just define it. I don't know that I would define it as jealousy, like the book.
Yeah, did. That's kind of a different thing too. Yes. Even though that's like the same answer,
All the examples that I'm giving of feeling inadequate or feeling unequal, I'm going to say like Juniper now, like I can justify it, but it's not a feeling of jealousy. Mm-hmm. It's more of awareness of inequality in the workplace, which is a different thing, and feeling a way about that, right? Yeah. Being aware that
I think
that exists.
Your justice,
mm-hmm.
like,
yes,
ticker going off.
Yes. I think you're right.
Because mm-hmm. you're very heavily invested in that things are unjust. And mm-hmm. like, that's like your personality. It's just more geared to like feeling those things more strongly.
Yes.
And so not that other people wouldn't, but that's your initial thought and your yes. initial reaction.
So I wouldn't describe it as I feel jealous. I feel that it's an injustice.
Exactly.
I guess I didn't really answer that question.
No, but I think you totally did. I mean, for me, I was going to say the money thing as well. Definitely jealous. But other than that, I don't know. I don't experience a lot of jealousy in my professional life.
Same.
Well, neither of us are authors, you know. I sit at a desk all day. I'm not jealous over computer work, you know?
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't think I can answer this question very well. But I think we both agree on the wage gap for sure, which is a different subject than the book, but that's like,
yeah, something that, and also even us. Like imposter syndrome, like that's not really a jealousy thing. It's right. more of a issue I have with myself, not with other people. Mm. I'm not saying I've never experienced jealousy.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Saying right now,
off
in
the
my
top
life,
of our heads, we're not really thinking of anything right now.
And in my professional life,
yeah,
I can't really think about. I'm kind of. I mean, I'm ambitious, but I'm also at this stage of life that I am in. I'm kind of like, if you want it, take it. It's just one thing less for me to do.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I know. Less is more. Less is more. Yeah. Unless it's money.
Man. Then more is definitely more.
Okay, next question. Athena Liu versus June Hayward versus Juniper Song. How much power is there in a person's name? Do you think that the sound of a person's name affords them better initial reactions from strangers, more opportunities, or other benefits?
Yes, 1,000%. Totally. Yes.
Totally. Oh my gosh. It's kind of funny because so my fiance and I have like been kind of joking around about like names that we like for future kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's like a few that we really like. We have our little list going. It's so fun. But also I see some people like naming their kids and it's like you do realize that they're going to be an adult one day. It's not just a kid name. It's a person name, mm-hmm. you know? When we're talking about these names, I'm thinking about it in that way. What would this be in this situation? What about this environment? Because you don't know who they're going to be either.
Right.
You know? So will it fit them? Like, all this kind of stuff. So absolutely. That's kind of a funny story about this, but yeah.
And there's an old saying that your name is your destiny.
Ooh,
have you ever heard that?
No.
Yeah. So obviously it implies that whatever your name is, that's the type of person that you become.
Do
so.
You think I'm a Laura?
Yes.
Oops.
Okay. Let me tell you, I have a really good and really funny example. If I've told this story before, sorry, but I have a really funny story of how this is true.
Okay.
So when I was in college, I worked at an establishment called the Powerhouse Gym. And one day a week in my job at the gym, I had to cold call people. I had to cold call people from a phone book. Okay. Back when there were phone books. And yes, I was in college when a phone book still existed and a landline.
Old.
Mm-hmm. So I had to call from the gym's landline out of a phone book, go through the phone book and just start calling numbers and offering them a free pass to the gym with the idea that they would come into the gym with a free pass, they would work out, and then they would sign up for a membership, right? So I called so many people and I said that I was Liz, because that is my name, from the Powerhouse Gym in Richmond. And would you be interested in click? People would just hang up on me.
Yeah.
Or I'd call again. I'd be like, hello, this is Liz from the Powerhouse Gym in Richmond. Would you be, how'd you get my number?
Yeah.
I don't want anything that you're selling. People were just nasty. Okay. Yeah. And this, honestly, this wasn't like a marketing strategy. This was because I was bored. So one day I had the idea that I was going to be someone different. And so I was calling people from the phone book, like I had to do once a week. And instead of being Liz, I was Lucy from Powerhouse Gym in Richmond. How are you doing? And do you know the kind of response Lucy got?
Oh my gosh.
So I would call people as Lucy and they would be like, well, hi, darling. How are you doing today? Well, hi, Lucy. What can I do for you? Well, aren't you sweet? I'd love to come into your gym. Sign me up. But Liz was like, how'd you get my number? But Lucy, on the other hand, she was just as sweet as iced tea, honey. So yeah, Lucy from Powerhouse Gym in Richmond got all kinds of people.
The amount of time it takes you to switch it up like that, I'm just
so...
You've had practice.
Yeah. So this is, honey, I can turn it on. I can turn it on. Listen, my dad was as country as they come. My daddy used expressions like, I'm as nervous as a long tailed cat on a front porch full of rocking chairs. I can turn it on. So anyway, yes. So to that question. I absolutely think
100%
that a person's name affords them better initial reactions. Now, I will say in other areas, Liz from the Powerhouse Gym would probably get a better reaction. But in the area I happen to be in, Lucy from Powerhouse Gym in Richmond got people wanting to come in and talk to her. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. That's gold right there.
Talk about cultural appropriation. Guilty. But that's my culture too. Like I grew up in Appalachia people. Yeah, I'm a mountain girl. You know. So
Yeah.
And the reason also on this subject, my dad was born and raised in Harlan, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And so was I, born and raised in Harlan, Kentucky. My mom, as we have already established, was Korean. And so the reason I think that I don't sound more like my dad is not because I didn't grow up there, because I grew up in Harlan County, Kentucky, mm-hmm. and I am very proud to be from Harlan County, Kentucky. But I remember one day coming home from school, and I was the type of kid when my mom said, how was your day at school? What'd you do today? I started from, well, first I walked into school. And then I went into my classroom and then my teacher said good morning. And then I said good morning. And then I talked to my best friend. And then I gave the entire play by play of my day. So funny. But one day I remember standing in my living room. My mom was sitting in this brown corduroy chair that we had. And I was telling her about my day. And at the end of every word, I would say, well, today, and the bell rang and I did this. And she told me to stop and she said, start all over, but say it again. You sound like your dad.
Oh my gosh. You sound like your dad.
So my mom, who also by the way, she had a very Korean accent. Right. So it wasn't like she was speaking, proper or anything.
Yeah.
It was just, it was funny because she would correct me and make me say it over. Mm-hmm. And I think I just became really hyper aware of that.
Yeah.
And so that's why I don't sound more like
yeah.
I am yeah, yeah, from yeah. that area. But again, there's nothing wrong with that. I am proud. And if I go to Harlan for any amount of time, I will sound more and more
like Lucy.
And I have no shame in it whatsoever. It's just not my default.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah.
But I speak Appalachian very well. But anyway,
you said that you knew you were getting close to my house if you heard the banjos going.
Yours comes out too, like
in the most random spots, because I also don't like have a drawl,
no,
you know, but sometimes I do.
Uh-huh.
And it just, I think it's when I'm trying to be funny or I'm around someone that I'm excited to be around.
Yes.
It just comes out of nowhere.
It just comes out,
especially if I'm around my family and my cousins. Mm-hmm. Oh.
But anyway, yes, I definitely do think there's something in a name.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I think people prejudge people based on their name.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like Laura. I don't think people look at Laura and make a judgment on you. But I do think that there are some names that people will automatically have some sort of idea of who this person is before ever knowing them.
If you know someone that was like rude to you or mean to you or something like that, then you're going to have that name in your head. Like, oh, you're
gonna have that bias.
Don't like that name.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I have a story about that, but I won't get into it just in case she ever listens. And I also don't want to offend anyone who might have this name. Actually, never mind. We just won't go down that road.
Well, I have something like that. It's not about me necessarily, but apparently whenever my fiance says mom was pregnant with him and his twin sister, she had a name for him, and then she woke up in the middle of the night and she was like, oh, I remember there was a kid that was named this name in kindergarten or preschool. He was mean to her.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, nope, can't use that name. So she changed it and like sat up in the middle of the night and remembered. That's hilarious.
Well, I'm going to make this really short. This is a funny story that I will tell more of maybe some other time, but really short, just on the subject of names. When Ben and I were going to meet one of his friends and their partner, and I asked what the partner's name was, and he told me, and it immediately was a trigger for me because I was like, ugh, I've only met one person in my life with that name, and I could not stand them. And then I was like, actually, come to think of it, this person is also from this area, but there's probably a lot more people named that in the world.
Yeah.
Turns out it was the same person.
No way.
Person who will not be named. You know who you are. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Threat.
No. Person who will not be named. But
I love it.
I mean, we're cool now, but there was a point in time where I was like, ugh. And so that name was just a trigger for me.
Yeah,
and it turned out to be the same person that I was being triggered by. So a lot
that
to a
so
name.
Funny. I love that. That's most we talked about. Any of these questions is all the names.
What's in a name? A lot, actually.
A lot. Okay, next question.
Do very hyped books often disappoint you? Share which books you have read that did not live up to the hype. Why do you think the book made the list of anticipated releases?
That is a lovely question. I'm looking up my most recent books that I've read.
I'm trying. A lot of books I read, I don't read because of hype lately anyway. Because
oh,
I just
do.
Well, maybe I do, but I read them because you've recommended them to me. But I haven't like
I'm
heard,
the hype.
I haven't heard all the hype. So, but I was thinking like during COVID, I read a lot of books that were hyped or like, I guess I read books that are in a book club or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But several books that come to mind that I read because they were hyped because everybody was reading them and they didn't disappoint, like, Little Fires Everywhere. A few years ago.
I haven't read that one yet.
Where the Crawdads Sing.
Mm, I've heard that one's kind of overhyped.
I didn't think so. I thought it was really good.
Okay. Okay.
I read it before the movie came out, though.
Okay.
So I don't know if that made a difference. And then Big Little Lies.
Okay. I've heard that one.
That one. So those were like three books I read because everybody was reading them at the time. And I wasn't disappointed in those at all. I thought they were good books.
Yeah.
But I also don't overanalyze books. Like, if it's a good read and it's a good story.
See, that's how I am. I was just looking through my Goodreads that I've recently read, like the books I've recently read. And they're almost all 4 or 5 stars.
Yeah. I have read them. I have read books that once I got through them, I was like, I didn't love that.
Yeah.
But it was just my take on it. Book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Verity is one that I recently read.
That would probably be a good one for like an overhype for me. For me. Like it was good, but everyone, especially Colleen Hoover, like everyone loves her books. And I'm not into that genre per se. Yeah. I feel like they're all the same. Kind of like Freda McFadden. Have you ever read The Housemaid?
Yes.
Okay, so kind of like that. Like, I'm not saying that it's the same genre, because it's obviously different, like, plots and things. But every single one of her books are kind of the same.
You said that aggressive. Her books.
Sorry. I'm just saying. Maybe that was an overhype for me, was The Housemaid.
Yeah. Verity was, maybe it was overhyped for me. I thought it was really good. Like, yeah, I thought it was really good. But I could not get into it. Like, it took me Once it got into like the meat of it, I was invested, and then I was like,
"Did you figure it out before?"
Not completely.
Yeah, not completely.
Yeah, but I wasn't surprised. There were some parts of the story that I was surprised.
Right. That's what I'll say. I do have one. Broken Country. I just read a few weeks ago by Claire Leslie Hall. And it's a new one. Also Reese's book club pick. And that for me, like I figured it out before. It's kind of a love story. Sad. There's some grief in it. But also it's like a triangle love story. But also mystery. Like a whodunit sort of situation. And after I finished the book, I went on to like see what other people were saying, and people were floored. Best book of the year. You have to read it. I couldn't believe my eyes. And I was just like, I kind of wondered, you know, it wasn't like a, oh my gosh, I'm taken by surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a really good story, but the like surprise was not really a
surprise.
Have
you read God of the Woods?
Yes. That also kind of was it for me. Like, I really enjoyed the book. The story, I loved all of the imagery. But at the end, I was like, okay.
I couldn't get through it.
Oh.
I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah. Now, I will say with that one, I listened to it, and there's so many different characters and so many different timelines of the characters. I couldn't keep it straight, so I had to switch to reading it like paperback. Okay. Because that was really hard to get into.
So I guess there are books that are totally overhyped.
I love talking about books. This is so fun. Why do you think the book made the list of anticipated releases? What was it called again?
Yellowface?
No, her book. Are we talking about Yellowface?
Oh, her book in the book.
Yeah, her book in the book. No, not Yellowface. I know that one. The Last Front. The Last Front. Why do you think The Last Front made the list of anticipated releases? Well, okay, let's think about this. Athena just died.
Right.
And she was her friend.
Yes.
And Athena's Chinese heritage had some. It was like talking about that. Now,
she even
aware that that was hers. But right.
But she even used the fact that she was Athena's friend.
Right.
And she oversold that, like that she and Athena were much better friends than they actually were, and that she was inspired by Athena to write this. So she definitely used Athena's fame and also words, but she definitely used Athena's fame and status to promote herself even more.
And so did the publishing company.
Yeah.
Without the knowledge that this was not her book, they still overused and what's the word I'm trying to think of? Exploited that imagery and kind of exploited her, but also like she could have said no. So I'm not saying like exploited her, but also exploited her friend. Knowing and not knowing, really. Yes. They did both.
Yes.
Which I'm sure was on purpose and on purposely written.
Yeah. Another point that the book makes is that Juniper Song, this was her first book, but June Hayward had written a book that wasn't received very well. But Juniper Song, this was her first book. And so you don't really get that much fanfare and anticipation on a pre-released book, a pre-published book from an unknown author.
Yeah.
So they definitely used Athena and her name and her reputation to get the buzz, I guess, about this book.
And it was a good story. People liked it, but it wasn't edited the way that it should have been.
Yeah.
It wasn't written the way that it was intended to be either.
Yeah. Okay. So the last one that we've already talked about is to talk about the cover. How did it make you feel and why? Actually, we've already talked about the cover. So pure genius that the jacket is yellow and it's covering a white book. Yes.
That's amazing.
So that is genius because, again, the whole concept of the book is a white person who is posing
cosplaying as a
cosplaying, that's a great way to say it, as an Asian American who wrote a book about Chinese history and culture. So she's posing. So this is genius that the author chose a yellow jacket for a white book. Pure genius.
Amazing.
I love this author so much. I want to read more of her stuff.
She wrote a book called Babel, and that has been on my list for months. And I'm even more invested into reading it after reading it.
I mean, again, she uses satire so much. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that, like, the title Yellow Face, that's kind of triggering.
Yeah.
Which I, again, intentionally so, am sure. But as an Asian American, even the title being Yellow Face was equal parts intriguing and triggering. Mm. So I wanted to read it more. So not just the cover, but also the title was kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I want to read this, but I kind of do want to read this. And what is that about?
Yeah.
And so, it was very well written. And again, like, I think also pure genius, the way she uses satire that draws you in, that makes you hate the character that you're supposed to hate.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not supposed to like her. And if any of you all read this book and you liked her, y'all got problems. No, but seriously, if you did, give us your perspective on this.
Yeah. Please.
I'd love to. I would love to hear.
On opposite side of the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to hear your thoughts on if you liked her. There were some things that were kind of redeeming qualities about her, I think, where she was
rooting
so close.
For her almost.
It was like, come on, you're
be
almost
honest.
There. Come on. And then she would spin it. And then you're like, oh, there we go. And the ending.
There's no way she can get out of this, and yet she's clawing her way.
Spoiler alert, I'm not going to give away the entire ending, but like the ending, when you think that she's cornered, she is busted, it is over for her, and she thinks that too for a second, and then the wheel starts spinning and she's like, wait, I can spin this, what if? And then she goes through the thoughts that she's thinking to manipulate this whole situation.
Master manipulator.
And that's how the book ends.
The type of person you have to gray rock with.
Yes. That's a term I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So wrapping things up. Our book of the month was Yellow Face. In honor of Asian American Pacific Islander Month, the author is an Asian American Pacific Islander. And so we just wanted to lean into that. Also, your host, me, Liz, Gen X, also an Asian American, Korean American. And if you haven't listened to our podcast where we interview our friends, Tina and Rebecca, Tina is Korean. Rebecca is her daughter. So she is Korean American like me. And that was a really good conversation. So all of this in honor of AAPI Heritage Month. Mm-hmm. This is a really good book for me. Any time of year, this is a really good book for me. I really enjoyed this author. I'd like to read more of her stuff. The question we always ask, does this matter? Does this book, does the conversations about this book, does this matter?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Because I think the way that she framed a lot of these things and exaggerated a lot of these things in the way that she did makes it an easier thing to discuss, where people maybe not are as afraid to discuss this.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it opens the door for conversation.
Yeah, it opens the door to conversation in a way that's like, even though it's exaggerated as horrible,
right?
Like, it's kind of funny too, the way that you read it. So yeah, I think it does. And also, I think reading matters. So
yeah.
Even if it's a book that doesn't really matter. I think it still matters.
Yes.
But no, this did. This did.
I agree with you. Sure. I think reading is very important. I think reading authors of different heritages and cultures are important. So I think all of that matters for sure. The storyline that is written in this book, I also think matters because it talks about things like racism, reverse racism. Yeah. It talks about cultural appropriation. And I think that's a tricky conversation to have too, because we live in a society that's so hypersensitive that people will claim something's culturally appropriated when it's like, what? So like no one can make like tequila, you know, or right. like no one can do this because they're not of a certain culture. And so I think that sometimes we get a little too sensitive about it. But then I also think it's also a very real thing where we should be careful not to do certain things.
Well, and I think too, that's why it's so important to listen to what people are saying. And because like our podcast with Tina and Rebecca, I loved listening to all of your all's things that you say, because I am white and I don't experience the same things that you all might experience, that you all do experience. Like, and so I want to learn about that.
Yes.
I want to learn about that because I am your friend and I want to empathize, but also understand so that I can speak out against the things that you all experience or that anybody experiences. And I mean,
to have awareness of it. I think the one thing we don't want to do is be dismissive of it because it's not your experience.
Right.
Right. Because you're not going to have the same experience as other people, which we have talked about. You're not
going to have the same experience as your sibling.
Yes. Which we have talked about so many times on this podcast in so many different forms and topics and episodes. But you're not going to have the same experience. So I think being mindful, being aware, and not being dismissive when someone says that that is, for example, in this book, when they recommended having a sensitivity reader read the manuscript, like, don't be dismissive of things like that.
Yeah.
Because you, Laura, like you said, as a white woman, you're not going to be aware of cultural triggers or terminology or things like that, that as me, an Asian American person might have.
Right.
And so, But that's okay, because why would you? Why would you have that experience, right? Mm-hmm. So just being open-minded. And like I said, even the title Yellow Face was a trigger for me where I'm like, I don't know.
And as you said that, I sat here and I was like, I was the one who recommended it. And I didn't even think twice about, well, I mean, I guess I did have like a thought like that probably is referring to something. But I was just like, do you want to read this? And I had no idea that that like might trigger you.
Yeah. So I had to read kind of what it, before I was like, yeah, let's do it. I was like, wait a minute.
What is this about? yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's important that we're aware and that we educate ourselves and that we're not dismissive of someone's perspective or feelings just because that's not our perspective or feeling. I don't think we expect everyone to have it all figured out. Just being aware and being open-minded to other people's opinions and perspectives, I think is important.
Yeah.
So. But what do you guys think? We want to know what you think. Please read this book.
Yes.
And tell us your thoughts.
Highly recommended.
I've talked to several of you guys out there that have told me that you have read it or you are reading it. So let us know what you think. Let us know if you think that this matters. Next month, our book of the month is going to be Great Big Beautiful Life
by Emily Henry.
Mm-hmm. And I'm love so Emily excited. Henry.
So you love her. Yes. And I have had her on my list.
Yes.
Never read one of her books. So I'm very excited about this.
I have like an Emily Henry library. Oh
my gosh.
Basically. I love her because she is my go-to like light summer reading.
Summer beach read.
Because she's a really good storyteller. And so they're easy reads and I get through them really quickly because she just draws you in. So I really like Emily Henry. This is, I think, her newest one.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
One of her newest one, most recent one. So, if you're done with Yellow Face for the month of June, start reading Great Big Beautiful Life, which is also about two authors.
Stop.
Yeah. So,
I haven't even looked at it yet.
I guess that's all for now.
That's all.
Until next time, yes. Happy AAPI month, everybody. It's Yay. Been great.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the podcast and you have been listening to From X to Z.
Bye.